call this meeting of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee to order. Let the record reflect on Thursday, April 8th, 2021. I want to thank our House Record Secretary Lori Rowland and our LIO moderator, Kelsey Riker, for helping us with behind-the-scenes work here that allows our committee hearings to run smoothly. As we start, I want to remind committee members to please silence your cell phones and those in the room as well. Present today, we have Representative McCarty, Representative Drummond, Co-Chair Hannon, Representative Prox, and myself, Co-Chair Shragi. I am not seeing anyone else online. Today, the committee will have its first hearing on House Bill 127, the Muni Bond Bank, UA Loan and Bond Limits, by Representative LeBon. We plan to hear from the bill sponsor, then take invited testimony and finish with public testimony. And welcome, Representative Pocketock. I would like to invite up Representative LeBon and his staff to the table. If you could please put yourselves on the record and start with your presentation. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Representative Bart LeBon, Amy Bushnell, my legislative aide. And we're happy to present House Bill 127. And for those members returning, and I see a couple of you, this may be a deja vu moment because the House entertained this bill last session and were able to pass it out before we were sidetracked with COVID issues and the bill was referred to the other body, and that's where it remained. So in a nutshell, the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank bill, as I call it, allows for extension of authority for the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank to entertain bills that originate for regional health organizations, construction of regional health clinics, and also gives access to the University of Alaska for debt refinancing, primarily for that purpose. The bill proposes to do several things. One, it removes the 49% Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority single project participation cap, and it raises the cap for all regional health organization projects from $205,000 to $500 million, $205 million to $500 million. This change is intended to expand opportunities for regional health organizations to use the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority. The benefits are clear in that regard, and then for the university, it gives them access to the Muni Bond Bank. So with that, I will ask on my legislative aide, Amy Bushnell, to maybe go through a few more of the details. And I believe, Mr. Chairman, we have Devin Mitchell on the line. If we do, then I'm going to use him as a lifeline to fill in some gaps here, because I'm sure what I've covered is just not sufficient for Mr. Mitchell. But Ms. Amy?
Hi. For the record, Amy Bushnell, staff to Representative LeBon. The House Bill 127 is fairly simple with only three sections. In the first section, it removes the project scope limitation of only heating or energy projects for the university, so it opens up a lot more possibilities for them. The second section, it removes the 49% project participation of the Municipal Bond Bank for regional health organizations, and it raises the project limit for a single project from $102 million to $250 million, and that's just for one single project. In Section 3, it raises the cap for the University of Alaska and for regional health organizations to $500 million. The difference there in Section 2, when it talks about regional health organizations, that's for one project at a time. And in Section 3, it's the amount of money that the bond bank can spend on regional health organizations in total. So in theory, if they did two projects that were each a quarter of $1 billion, they would only be able to do two of them total. So.
Wonderful. Does that conclude your presentation?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Mitchell may want to weigh in.
Wonderful. So we have Devin Mitchell up, the Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority. Mr. Mitchell, if you could please put yourself on the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Devin Mitchell, and I'm here in my capacity as the Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority. I think Representative LeBon and his staff have done a good job of introducing the bill. The driver behind the request or the need for the change is that right now, as was outlined, there's a limitation of financing participation for the bond bank on a regional health organization project of 49% of the project. What this means is that a regional health organization considering financing a project would have to not only use the bond bank, but also have another significant financier or lender to complete the funding of their project. And this creates inefficiencies that administratively result in pressure to not use the bond bank, to use other alternatives, even if they might be slightly more costly. The bond bank has done a couple of projects for regional health organizations. We participated in a loan with the Tanana Chiefs Conference for refinancing of their clinic in Fairbanks. We also participated in the financing of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation's new hospital project in Bethel, and lived within the limitations of the current statutes. The Tanana Chiefs Conference subsequently, and part of this is a real success story because the Tanana Chiefs Conference had borrowed money prior to using the bond bank to refinance their bonds, and they weren't able to achieve an investment grade credit rating on those bonds. And after the bond bank worked with that regional health organization to try to get them to structure their transaction in a way that the municipal market expects to see, they were actually able to get an investment grade credit rating, similar, very close actually to the bond bank's rating. And so that was, in my view, a really kind of the meat and potatoes of what the bond bank program is all about. And that's kind of teaching or providing people opportunity to access markets so that they can gain experience and then be able to access markets independent of the bond bank. And that goes back to the original mission of the bond bank with municipalities as well, where municipalities in Alaska, back in the 1970s, a lot of them, even Alaska in general in 1970s, was viewed kind of like a different country almost from the financial markets in New York. And so the bond bank could lend credit support to smaller communities to the extent the state was able to provide it and reduce costs for capital projects, and again, help communities gain experience so that ultimately they could potentially issue bonds without the bond bank if it was more advantageous for them to do so. The other change to the bill that was referenced, the increase in the cap for the University of Alaska, that was really a result of the university having a fairly draconian negative credit action against them following some of the financial stress that they've experienced over the last several years. And the bond bank has worked with the university on a specific project on the university campus there in Fairbanks, and it made sense to provide greater opportunities or alternatives for the university to use the bond bank for either refinancing other outstanding loans or any new money projects that might come down the road here in the future. If there were specific questions about the bond bank program or process, be happy to answer those. I don't know how deep you want to dig into the mechanics.
Thank you, Mr. Mitchell. And I want to take just a quick moment to note that Representative McCabe joined us at 8:05 a.m. And Representative LeBon, I see that Myron Dosh is online. Would you like Mr. Dosh to present and then take questions, or how would you like to proceed on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Dosh is the Chief Financial Officer for the University of Alaska, and he is very welcome to make a comment should he so desire.
Mr. Dosh, would you like to make any comments before we proceed to questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Myron Dosh, and for the record, I'm the Chief Finance Officer for the University of Alaska, and I was calling in to express the university's support for this bill. I think it's been well summarized already by the other members, but this does provide the opportunity for the University of Alaska to obtain a loan through the bond bank at a potentially lower rate than we could otherwise obtain for ourselves. And really that comes about, that difference comes about, the bond bank has a slightly higher credit rating currently than the university does. So it really has a help in the bottom line effect that we can save on interest costs on any refinancings or any new capital projects that the university might borrow for in the future. So again, just to summarize, fairly straightforward from our standpoint, this does provide an opportunity and an option for the university that would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dosh. And Representative Hannon, I believe you had a question.
Well, thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Mitchell, I think my question, well, I know my questions are for you, and I'm hoping you could, instead of going deeper into this bill, go up to a little bit higher level for those of us who do not completely understand how the municipal bond bank is structured in relation to other state bondings. At some point, I'm hoping, you know, once I have a better view of that, to understand whether this bond rating of the municipal bond bank intersect with other state bond ratings. And then one of my sort of details is why, what created the limit on the university to only heating and energy projects initially. But I'm looking for a bigger, you know, a high-level overview of what the municipal bond bank is structured to do, how it intersects with other state bond rating, and maybe what the capacity or bonding is now.
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Hannon. So the bond bank program was created back in 1975, and it's a public corporation of the state of Alaska. And so it's similar to the other public corporations that you might be more familiar with, like the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation or ADA or the Student Loan Corporation or others. And I alluded to earlier, the purpose of the corporation was to lend credit support to credit-worthy municipalities that would otherwise pay higher interest rates when accessing capital markets because of unfamiliarity with Alaska. The process that we go through when considering loans, there's a five-member board that's comprised of three members of the public and then the commissioners of commerce and revenue. And I guess I neglected to say that the bond bank is one of the public corporations that's housed in the Department of Revenue, so alongside the Housing Corporation. When we receive a loan application, we have a independent financial advisor that we have write up a credit analysis on the application, and oftentimes we'll have had an ongoing dialogue with a potential borrower long before any of that happens to ensure that they have a strong application and we're able to structure their loan request so that we can make a favorable recommendation to the board. But in any event, there's a credit report that's created. It's typically, you know, 6 to 10 pages, that type of detail. The board considers that, and then if the board approves it, then we can lend money to that entity. And how we do that, because we don't have money, we borrow the money from the municipal market, and so we issue bonds of the bond bank that carry a moral obligation pledge of the state of Alaska, which is the credit support I referred to earlier. And moral obligation is a term of art in the public finance world where the enacting statutes of a program require that upon issuance of bonds, you fund a reserve that's in place to secure the bonds in the event of a payment failure, and that in addition to funding that reserve, you have an annual reporting requirement to the legislature and governor to notify them of the sufficiency of that reserve. And the implied moral obligation is that if that reserve were insufficient, that the governing body would appropriate to replenish it. And that structure gets you a rating based on the state of Alaska. So we wind up with a credit rating that's one notch off the state of Alaska. As these bonds are all self-paying, they're not paid by the state of Alaska, and they have not been paid by the state of Alaska, and there has not been a draw on that reserve, and there has been no funding to pay for a delinquent borrower in the 45-year history of the bond bank program. This isn't counted against the debt capacity of the state of Alaska. It's a standalone program, and maybe similar to, again, like using the other public corporations as proxies. The bonds that are issued by the housing corporation, for example, aren't counted against the state of Alaska's debt capacity unless the state of Alaska were to be paying those bonds out of the general fund. So there is one instance of that, but otherwise, any of the collateralized housing loans or the capital project bonds that are paid by the housing corporation out of general revenue, those aren't included in the state's debt capacity either. As far as the university goes and the $87.5 million cap, it related to, I think, what was a somewhat creative solution to the difficulty in funding a large capital project on the University of campus in Fairbanks, the coal-fired power and heat plant, that the cost of the plant exceeded what the state was able to help participate in funding on a cash basis, and what the university was able to fund at the time that we started talking about it through their historical revenue bond program. And so the bond bank was introduced just as an alternative. And so the university still wound up issuing bonds, but they're privately placed with the bond bank, and the bond bank then issues its bonds in the public market and passed through those rates to the university. And that $87.5 million cap was what was anticipated to be needed for the last piece of the funding of that particular project. And increasing that cap and eliminating the restriction on just power and heat projects, I think, it is clearly just to provide an alternative, as we already spoke to, Myron, and I already spoke to, for the university to consider in the future to ensure they're able to get the lowest rates that are available to them.
Thank you, Mr. Mitchell. Representative Hannon, a follow-up?
Thank you. Through the chair. Mr. Mitchell, are there any other programs or projects within the Municipal Bond Bank that have caps or limits, or were these the only two places where there were specified restrictions on what you could bond on? I.e., could a municipality come to you for any amount and any capacity and any type?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon. So it's interesting, there are more restrictions on the Regional Health Organization program than any other category of lending that the bond bank has. We do have caps for every one of our categories of lending. So for the municipalities, joint actions agencies, and joint insurance associations, it's $1.5 billion. Right now for regional health organizations, $205 million, and the university, $87.5 million. And so a total capacity right now to lend of $1.792 billion. And currently the bond bank has outstanding loans through that are to municipalities or a joint action agency and the university of $987 million, and then to regional health organizations just over $100 million. So, and this is a little bit dated, it says of September of 2020, but that's in general where we are currently.
One more follow-up.
Yeah, Co-Chair Hannon.
Thank you. So, Mr. Mitchell, do I understand that to mean that by increasing the limits on these, because you referenced a total ceiling for the municipal bond bank of $1.79 billion, so when we raise the limits on these two categories, is it the potential that it restricts someone else's, a municipal entity, from being able to bond a project because it gets us to that total cap? Did I understand that correctly?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, the 1.792 is just the summation of the other authorizations, and so that amount would increase if you increased the other authorizations. And again, these authorizations have the $1.5 billion for municipalities and other authorized purposes has increased during my tenure, I believe, five times. So when I initially started working with the bond bank, the borrowing or authority was $125 million. And so there's been significant growth within the program during the last 20 years that has resulted in that increase in cap. And so it's not an unusual instance to be before the legislature to request cap increase. The part of the reason why we haven't asked for a larger increase in the cap is that these are moral obligation bonds of the state of Alaska, and we want to be fiscally prudent in our approach to increasing cap to ensure that it's thoughtful and progressive rather than have it provides comfort to me to have more contact with the legislature as a program grows rather than have growth that's less restricted and has more of an opportunity to deviate from what the leadership might think that it should be. And so I think that's why the cap requests have been, certainly the regional health organization cap request is significantly smaller than the potential demand could be. But if that's the case, that there are large projects that come through the bond bank after this change, if it were to be implemented, then I'm comfortable with the idea of coming back to the legislature and providing more information and letting you know how the program might be developing so that you can make additional decisions.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have a question, not seeing any others from committee members. Representative LeBon, Representative Brox, do you have a question? Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Sharkey. Let's see. So from the entity's perspective, they get a better credit rating because of the state's backing of the project. Is that, am I understanding that correctly?
Through the chair, yes.
And from the citizens' perspective, as far as managing the risk, we're depending on the expertise and integrity of the board members, and I guess you.
Through the chair, Representative Frost, that is true, but these projects also have to go through a local process. It's not just us. And so certainly the municipal borrowing, there has to be, if it's a general obligation bond, there has to be both the local council or assembly has to approve it, and then the local voters on a revenue bond basis, at least the council and assembly, and sometimes the voters. Certainly the regional health organizations, there's a process at their level to ensure that they want to proceed with a particular project. It's a combination thereof, yes. And again, we do have annual reporting that we provide. Just like all the public corporations, we're required to conduct an audit and provide an annual report, do that each year. And we do have public credit ratings on the bond bank program as well. And if the bond bank program were to not continue to follow some of the fiduciary standards that have been established, that would be reflected in a number of places, both the annual report, the audit, as well as potentially our credit rating write-ups.
Representative Prompt, yes. Do you have a follow-up?
Yes, I do. So there are industry fiduciary guidelines established for the bond bank?
Through the chair, Representative Frost, there are, in the sense that we're issuing public debt with a credit rating attached to it, and so that process has a wide array of fiduciary standard associated with it. I don't know what the motivation would be to deviate from the highest of standards. From my perspective, anybody in my position, I don't get a bonus if we issue more bonds. It's just more work for me. If we have what I would call successful years for me from a programmatic basis have been probably the least desirable from a personal basis, because my time, I wind up spending more than a regular workday working on my projects or the projects of the program. But it's not like a private sector position where then you get compensated for that. You just get compensated as if you had done the minimum. Hmm. So there isn't any, in my view, driver to deviate from that high standard that we've established.
Mm-hmm.
And, Representative Prompt.
I guess the hesitancy that I would have and that the public might have is that school bonds were promoted on the assumption that the state legislature was going to pay a good part of the debt burden, and they didn't read the fine print of subject to appropriation. Now there's the municipalities, at least in Fairbanks, are concerned that they are asked to make good on their obligation, I suppose. And can we run into a similar situation with this program?
Through the chair, Representative Frost, that's a unique situation, of course, with the school debt reimbursement program, where the state has participated in debt service payment and then in times of fiscal stress has not, and that burden is the local jurisdictions are required to issue general obligation bonds, and so they're 100% committed to payment of that debt service, where, like you pointed out, the state has this subject to appropriation clause in the program. The loans that are made to these entities are structured to either conform to a general obligation bond structure or a revenue bond structure or in some very limited instances, a lease revenue bond structure. And so there are commitments that are made at the borrower level that provide a pathway for ensuring that any corrective action that's needed is taken in the event of stress that might come down the road. And it would be the same if at the local level, it would be the same if they issued these bonds independent of the bond bank, because in many instances, almost all instances, there are some limited instances where it would be difficult to find alternative financing. They could do the same thing that they're doing through the bond bank. They would just pay more. And so typically, and I failed to mention this earlier, but when we do issue new money bonds for communities, we ask our financial advisor to calculate the savings as a result of using the bond bank relative to what the community might have paid in interest expense or the borrower might have paid an interest expense if they had gone outside the bond bank. And over the last several years, our new money issuance has been fairly stifled, and that's reflective, I think, of a number of things going on in our state from a funding perspective. So the savings have been in the $1 million to $2 million range. But if you go back through the last 5 years, we've had years where savings approached $100 million. So for a program that has an operating budget of up to $1 million, and I say up to because we only spend the full budget authorization if we're very busy, if we issue a lot of bonds. If we don't issue a lot of bonds, then our budget is less. So it's an efficient program that only uses what it needs to rather than uses what it can. And the community's saving the money, that goes directly into Alaskans' pocket in one way or another, either in decreased taxes, decreased user fees for the infrastructure that has been deemed needed in their communities.
Yes, thank you. Another follow-up, please.
Go ahead.
I guess just maybe a comment, and I'm not as concerned about the bond bank evaluating the loan as I am about the borrower. This situation creates an incentive for the borrower to borrow more than they otherwise would have borrowed, simply because it gives the impression that somebody else is securing the loan. And I would be very concerned that we are adding to that, and that will be the biggest thing to control, I suppose.
Mr. Mitchell, would you like to respond to that?
Through the chair, Representative Frost, I understand your concern. I think it is a different, because so the bond bank's not paying anybody's debt service.
Right.
We don't and couldn't pay anybody's debt service. And so when we talk to potential borrowers, it's really just an alternative means of funding a project that might cost less than other alternatives or be administratively less burdensome than other alternatives for the issuing entity. But I do understand your concern, and certainly the angst. I work closely with the finance director community, as well as to a limited degree local elected officials, and the angst and anger created by the school debt reimbursement program and other programs that the state has that aren't necessarily funded. I'm well aware of that, and certainly I don't think if you asked those local folks if the bond bank fell into that same category, I don't think they would say that it did.
Thank you, Mr. Mitchell. Representative LeBon, go ahead. Representative McCarty.
Okay, thank you. Through the chair, I share similar concerns with Representative Prox, but I also am hearing that the bond bank has a fiduciary responsibility, and so just because the $500 million exists doesn't mean it's entitlement money, but that it's reviewed to determine whether that's a really attainable process for whoever's asking for the bond. Is that accurate to reflect on? Because you also have a credit rating as the bond bank, not just the credit of whoever's asking. Is that correct?
Through the chair, yes, that's generally correct. I mean, having an authority to issue bonds at the bond bank level or make loans doesn't mean that loans are going to be made, certainly. Like I said, the existing cap of the bond bank right now is $1,792,000,000. And so just because you have that ability to issue doesn't mean that we're going to go sell bonds right up to that cap. There has to be bona fide fiduciarily acceptable local level or underlying borrower level projects that would support a local bond issuance that then the bond bank would lend money on a conduit. So again, we just borrow money to provide a lower interest rates to the underlying borrower, and the money that pays those loans back comes directly from that borrower to our trustee to pay debt service. And so unless we're 100% sure, because bonds aren't something that you can call the bank and say, hey, can I be late this month? It's not that type of loan. It's a loan that is paid 100% of the time and paid on time. And if you're not prepared to do that, you shouldn't be applying to the program. And so, in fact, the bond bank board has told borrowers that they should seek alternatives in the past when projects have been proposed that are too speculative for a program like the bond bank, because it's not a speculation program. It's a lending program for purposes that you have 100% expectation they're going to be repaid.
Mr. Mitchell, would it be fair to say that you're there to facilitate lending, but that you have a fiduciary duty, and that in layman terms that means that you have a responsibility to protect the state and vet those that apply for loans or bonds, to make sure that they have an ability to pay and will not default? Is that a correct summary?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair.
And Representative LeBon, I had a question. Is there any difference between what's before us today and what passed out of the body in the last legislature?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for that question. And no, it's pretty much the same bill as what the legislature, the House, passed last session. And if I could maybe just add a little bit.
Please.
The bonding world and the banking world are very similar to each other. And in my banking career at times, I would participate on loans through ADA, Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. The bank would finance could finance as little as 10% of the deal, or as much as, up to 50% was the biggest participation, sharing 50-50 with ADA on a deal. ADA has the option to go to the bond market to raise its share of the funding, or it could use its own ADA receipts or reserves. It had the option to do either one. The bank would make its loan using its lending capacity. And just because the bank has a lending capacity of, say, $30 million to a single borrower, that's rarely exercised. The prudence of lending, you're looking for safety and soundness in your actions. So banks often, I visited several of you on this committee about this bill, banks often look for participants or partners on loans to smooth out the risk, to share the risk. And project financing, if the Muni Bond Bank passes, doesn't mean the project can't still be financed. Maybe you approach a bank, maybe you approach ADA. I partnered with USDA, Bureau of Indian Affairs, Small Business Administration. Different entities are out there that could finance many of these projects with participation from a bank. So it's just another tool in the toolbox for both the university and regional health organizations. So I don't know if that helps at all. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative LeBon. Do other members have questions? Representative Drummond.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Mr. Mitchell, you said a few minutes ago that the ceiling of the bonding capacity, if I heard you correctly, was approximately $1.8 billion. Can you explain what that means?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, it means that the current statutes allow for up to that amount of bonds to be issued without any additional authorization from a third party beyond the bond bank board. And as outlined earlier, it's comprised of $87.5 million for the university, $205 million for regional health organization loans, and then $1.5 billion for municipalities, joint action agencies, or joint insurance associations.
Follow up?
Please, Representative Drummond.
Are you close to that ceiling at this time, or are you looking to issue as many bonds as possible in order to achieve your authority?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond. No, we don't try to issue bonds. We try to fund good projects as they come along. And so over the course, like I said earlier, over the course of the last several years, the public projects sector at the municipal level has waned a bit. There hasn't been as much activity as some prior years. And currently, and this again is a little dated a couple of months ago, but we had about $1.1 billion in bonds outstanding. And so we had a remaining capacity, theoretical capacity, of $694 million that would represent the additional bonds that the bond bank could issue at this point in time.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Do other members have questions? Representative Pukatok.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Mitchell, you elaborated a little bit on the municipal process for vetting bond package before it even comes to, well, I guess after the deal's kind of worked out, before it goes to the voters. Can you elaborate a little bit on the university's process for public engagement on approving a bond package?
Through the chair, Representative Pukatok, I might defer to Myron if he's still on the line, since that's his area of expertise. But they definitely have higher standards and do need to obtain legislative approval if they have larger issuances. They have some limited authority for new money issuances, but otherwise need to get specific legislation passed for new money bonds.
Mr. Dosh, could you take a stab at the question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, the university, goes through due diligence, business plans. We assess, a new project based on mission, based on need. We fully view that when we engage in debt or issue new debt, it's for a viable purpose and that we have the capacity to do so. We don't have the same, you mentioned the word public, we don't have the same, public obligation in the sense of the citizenry, but there is a state statute if a bond issue is anticipated to exceed $2.5 million in annual debt service, we are required to seek legislative approval for that. So those kind of our larger bond issuances. In addition, the university, the Board of Regents, would approve by policy, our policy, any new debt issuances and any new refinancing debt. And they have a policy level based debt ratio that is monitored as well. So that's kind of some of the due diligence on how we look at debt obligations at the university. I hope that addresses your question.
Follow-up.
Representative Pukatok, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Dosh. That helps with understanding it. And then maybe this one is for Mr. Mitchell. I'm not sure. My coffee's still hitting. But can you elaborate on the history of debt paid in the two sections that we're upping the cap on?
Definitely. Through the chair, Representative Pukatok. So the Regional Health Organization authorization of the bond bank is relatively new, and I'm not sure what members of the committee's familiarity with regional health organizations is, but it's defined in statute as an entity that, and typically they're nonprofits, but they're associated with tribal entities typically that covers, I believe it's 3,000 square miles of a region and provide for the health care in that region. And so it's similar to maybe the Anoka corporations kind of in the way they're laid out across the state. And there's 12 or 13 of these regional health organizations in Alaska. And they receive funding directly from the United States through compact agreements, which have been challenged historically, and the regional health organizations sued for the payment amounts they were eligible to receive, and those lawsuits went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the regional health organizations prevailed, and their funding is automatic at this point, and that's been litigated through the Supreme Court, and so it's not something that has a risk attached to it like some other healthcare sectors might. And the type of funding that flows to Alaska is also, I'm not sure if the committee's aware of it, but significant in the realm of in excess of $1 billion a year that flows to the state. And in certain instances, they increase that funding by entering into further agreements for funding of facilities as they're required. And so like the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation's hospital project in Bethel, they were able to enter into an agreement with IHS for additional funding based on a staffing package in the mid-300 range, like 360 positions. And so that correlates to a dollar amount. Maybe it was $80 million a year, and this is off the top of my head, but that then they receive in addition to the current funding, and they can ensure that they're able to pay for the project based on that increase in funding. So in any event, there's a significant credit strength to the regional health organization sector of the bond banks program. But it's only existed since 2016, or 2015 legislation was passed, which authorized the bond bank to lend to regional health organizations. And I believe the newness of it is in part why there's some of the restrictions that we're asking the legislature to consider removing at this point. We've made two loans through the regional health organization program, one to the Tanana Chiefs Conference and one to the YKHC. And both of those loans have paid on time, and in fact, the Tanana Chiefs Conference have paid their loan off early, and so it's been a positive experience to this point. And like I said earlier, the Tanana Chiefs Conference couldn't get an investment grade rating prior to the bond bank working with them and getting them to restructure how they have funds flow through their organization. Because there's different requirements in the municipal market than you might have in other areas. We're not looking for a title interest on a piece of property. We're looking at a commitment of a revenue stream, which it just takes a different thought process. But in any event, the TCC was able to get, like I said earlier, a higher grade credit rating. The as far as the university goes, we just have the one project, and the university is paid on that as required. It's a parity revenue bond issue of the University of Alaska, and haven't had any issues.
Follow up.
Representative Bakhtov.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Mitchell, for the elaboration. And I guess just an ask in that, can you give us the number for TCC's debt paid in full? And then maybe a little of the understanding of the current caps, and are those met right now? How much, what are they at of the $205 million for the regional health organizations and the $87.5 million for the UA system, kind of where does existing debt put it at in relation to the current cap?
Definitely, through the chair, Representative Bakhtov. And so the Tanana Chiefs Conference, off the top of my head, they borrowed around $50 million to refinance that existing loan. And to give you an idea of the savings that resulted, they were paying almost 8% on that loan prior to the bond bank, and that rate dropped to around 3.5%. So that equated to around $40 million in today's dollars in savings versus what they would have paid on the interest otherwise. And like I said, then they wound up paying that loan off early through a refinancing that they conducted independent of the bond bank. The total issuance or the total amount outstanding for the regional health organizations right now is $100.7 million, and so there's capacity of around $104 million or $103 million. What I've experienced is the bigger issue, and it has, I mean, it worked out with YKHC because they got a USDA loan for $170 million of their total project, and USDA wants the project to be done before they're willing to lend the money. And so the bond bank coming in with $102 million of bond proceeds worked out really well. They were able to stage the project into two components and still get the USDA money at a below market rate as well as utilize the bond bank loan. In the case of TCC and some of the other borrowers that are out there that I've talked with about the program, the restriction of only being able to fund 49% of a project, which is unique to the regional health organization. We don't have that limitation for any of the other categories of lending. It creates this inefficiency and difficulty because you have to have both a bond bank financing as well as some other third party financing, which administratively is burdensome and just from a process perspective is more difficult to implement. and so we see that creating a reluctance to use the bond bank, even though it might be a more advantageous alternative from a financial perspective for that portion of the loan that the bond bank could finance. And then there are some projects that are out there that are, again, the project in Bethel was over $300 million. I mean, there's a new facility in Nome that was financed a different way, but again, it was several hundred million dollars. There's a newer facility in Iktiavik that's also newer that was $180 million facility. And so the types of projects that are out there in rural Alaska, when you're building what are world-class healthcare facilities, if you go into these facilities, and I've been in the one in Barrow or Iktiavik, I've been in the building under construction in Bethel, and they're world-class facilities. You could be in any urban city in the United States once you walk into those facilities, and they're very expensive. And so that's in part why we're asking for the increase in cap and asking for the increase in the authorized individual loan, as well as the increase in the project participation percentage. So that we can potentially work with some of the larger borrowers to provide for these projects that are secured by money from the United States through compact agreements for healthcare projects that are deemed. And another point that I failed to mention earlier is that one of the requirements for the bond bank to lend money to a regional health organization is that the commissioner of the Department of Health and Social Services has to opine that the project's going to both increase the quality of health care in that region as well as save the state of Alaska revenue. And so that's an additional check that has to be made prior to the bond bank participating in a regional health organization loan. And so, again, when the bond bank's participating in these projects, if we're lowering the cost, it is just a means of either allowing additional health care services to be provided or reducing costs that the state might otherwise have to pay.
Follow up.
Representative Fakatak.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Mitchell, for helping me reminisce about the Barrow Hospital. I was a laborer over there about 8 years ago, so I can attest to its beauty both inside and out. So, and you started to dovetail on what was going to be my next question, and that was highlighting the the market point savings that utilizing the bond bank gives to an organization like TCC, I think was the example you used, going from an 8%, what would be our version of an APR to 3.5%, and that's, as you mentioned, significant financial savings that you're able to utilize because of Alaska's very specific and unique revenue streams to the different organizations. And then you did start to elaborate on the how you guarantee the loan via whatever revenue stream it is for either the regional health organization, the university, or the municipalities. Can you elaborate a little bit more on the university's, I guess, revenue stream guarantee that ties into, you know, the terms of whatever loan they might be pursuing?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Bakadak. So the municipal market, again, we when we're structuring loans, we don't look to have a title interest in a piece of property like you might see if you were doing as Representative LeBron in his former life. If he was funding a commercial loan for a building, well, you're going to have a title interest on that building and be able to foreclose in the event of a default. In our case, we don't. There's no way we want a hospital in Bethel, and so we want a what's called a revenue pledge, meaning that the organization commits and pledges covenants, legally binds themselves to having revenue flow through their organization in a certain way so that it can be pledged to the bond issue. And so you have typically what's called a waterfall of revenue, where it first might pay operation and maintenance because you got to pay for those things on an ongoing basis to ensure the organization can survive, then debt service, and typically will require a rate covenant on a revenue pledge, meaning that you have to have net revenues that exceed the debt service that's due during that year by some amount. So like a 1.25 times coverage, so you have to have an extra 0.25 of net revenue above debt service. So if you had a dollar of debt service, you have to have $1.25 of net revenue. And that's just a security feature to ensure that somebody doesn't budget too tightly or they don't anticipate a negative event and then wind up in a position where they don't have the revenues available to pay debt service. There's also reserve funds that are put in place to secure the bond. So those are typically 1 year's worth of debt service that's set aside in an account that's irrevocably pledged to the bonds, and in the event of a failure of the underlying revenues to pay debt service, would pay in their stead. And then there are outline procedures and, again, covenants, contractually binding commitments of the issuing entity to take remediative action to replenish that reserve and correct, you know, adjust rates and charges, adjust activity, procedures, whatever might need to be undertaken to ensure that revenues could be sufficient to replenish that reserve as well as pay debt service and meet coverage in the coming year. You would also have an additional bonds test incorporated into that document, which an additional bonds test just ensures that the underlying entity doesn't go out and borrow a bunch of other money. What I mean, theoretically, they could borrow money from some other source. And so prior to doing that, they need to be able to meet an additional bonds test, which would be either historical, that they have sufficient revenues to make coverage even with the new debt service, or prospective with a rate analysis. As far as the university goes, we have just a parity pledge, a revenue bond pledge from the university. And so it's again got all of the same legal commitments that all of the other bonds that the university has outstanding have. And so you share, it's viewed as a credit strength because you share your common interest in ensuring that the university does what it is supposed to do with an array of bondholders.
Representative Buckstock, does that satisfy your question?
That doesn't, Mr. Chairman. Just one last follow-up, I think. Thank you for the brief overview of all the little different rabbit trails that I tend to take in these types of discussions. And I think the last one would be as far as looking at the fiscal note and the management costs associated, the administrative costs associated with handling more capacity. Can you speak to how you offset that? I imagine there's an administrative fee or a management fee, maybe a point or two taken on some of these bond packages that helps pay for the administration of said bond packages.
Through the chair, Representative Parkatuck. So how the program works is we have costs when we issue bonds. That's how our professional services contracts are structured. So really the fiscal note is anticipating that we would have bond issues as a result of the statutory change. And if we did have bond issues along the line of $100 million a year, those costs are in what we would anticipate being incurred to pay for those bond issuance. And that's things like credit ratings. You have to pay the credit rating agencies to obtain a credit rating. We have bond counsels. We have a nationally recognized law firm that helps us structure our bonds so that we have legally binding, enforceable bond issues. We have a financial advisor that helps us structure our bond issues so that it conforms to the market and investors' preferences. Then there's some other smaller costs in paying agent, trustee, posting the disclosure document for the bond issue, things along that line. And so to the extent we do have those costs, we would roll that cost into the transaction, and that's typical of bond issues. So when the bonds were sold, we would have, and I believe the number is $350,000. If that were the case, that we had that much in bond issuance costs, we would just have a like amount of proceeds from the bond issue segregated into a cost of issuance account that would then pay those costs, and then that amount would be amortized over the life of that loan and paid by the underlying borrower. So it wouldn't be paid by the bond bank directly out of bond bank resources. It would be paid by the borrower requesting the loan in this instance.
Thank you very much. Representative Hannon, or Co-Chair Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Shragi. Mr. Mitchell, the restriction on regional health organizations' bond participation to 49% that you said was that they were only added into Municipal Bond Bank Authority in 2015, so just 6 years ago, and you were there then. So I'm curious as to whether that was the initial statutory request, or was that somehow changed in the political process? And just since that's, you know, unique, and I haven't heard anyone describe it as good financially, I'm curious why and how that 49% restriction came in there when we're opening up a new category. And, you know, frankly, it doesn't surprise me that a medical facility, I've been to the Manelik one, you know, that we know that healthcare costs are the highest in the nation, and when we're building something, it's going to be very high tech and very specialized and cost a lot. So it seems like those caps there that were put in both for the total amount that a project could cost and that 49%, they seem very specific. So I'm wondering the rationale behind them, because I don't understand it from where I'm sitting now.
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Representative Hannon. So the original bill didn't have the 49%, and I can't recall if it had the I think the 102.5 limit for per project was really just kind of a fairness thing, that there was a desire not to have, like, one of the primary sponsors for the bill was the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation, and they could have used that entire $250 million cap, which maybe was viewed as being inappropriate, that it should be spread around a little bit more. In Senate Finance, there was some concern about the evolution of the bond bank to lend money to a regional health organization, because it is a new avenue for the bond bank, and was something that we didn't have direct experience with. And I think there was still a learning curve going on as far as the real underlying financial strength of the regional health organizations and how they are able to obtain money and commit money. So in that committee, one of the staffers at the time was a woman named Angela Rodell, and she used to work in public finance as a municipal advisor, and she provided some thoughts on how to mitigate one of the co-chair's concerns, which was Senator Anna McKinnon, and they modified the bill, and that was acceptable to everybody involved at the time. Like I said, the YKHC folks were able to make their project work with the limitations that were placed into the bill, as was TCC initially. And it's really, and as you gain experience, you're able to sometimes improve structures, and that's really where we are today, that we put our toe in the pool, it maybe is a good analogy, and it felt pretty good, and so we're going to maybe, you know, jump in a little bit more, and that's where we are.
Great, thank you.
Representative Punkatuck.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm not sure, maybe I missed it during the initial question, but I had asked about the current debt taken out within the caps. I think you said $100 million and some change in the regional health organization cap of $205 million, and I think I missed the university's existing debt-to-cap ratio, I guess you could say. Can you elaborate on that one last time for me, please?
Through the chair, Representative Okaduk, I'm not sure that I have that. I know that they didn't entirely use the $87.5 million. It's such a specific cap only for the specific heating power project if memory serves, that it would be in the $60 to $70 million range that would be outstanding under that cap, but it's been rolled in this little sheet that I have in front of me. It's been rolled into the total rather than separately identified.
And Mr. Mitchell, I believe Representative LeBon wants to jump in here.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. If Mr. Dosh is still on the call, he would have that number.
I believe so. Mr. Dosh, could you address that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, I do not have the exact number, but it is, sort of just south of the $87 million cap. It's probably in the $70 million range. The reason is because we've paid down principal over the last 5 years since those bonds was issued. I apologize, I don't have the exact amount, but it's probably in the $70 million range.
Representative Pakatok, one follow-up.
Mr. Chairman. Just trying to get an overall understanding of what this bill does in its entirety and understanding the history behind it. You spoke to the infancy of the regional health debt program going to 2015-2016. Can you kind of highlight, when the birth of the university utilizing the Muni Bond Bank program dates back to and in the regional health organization? You also spoke to some of the performance as far as TCC, I think, being able to pay off $50 million in the last 5 years. Can you highlight a little bit more on the university's performance, so kind of the history of the university's debt program?
Mm-hmm. And through the chair, I can't remember the university. I don't know if Myron does, but I do remember it seems like Senator Meyer was on the Finance Committee. If I don't know, Mr. Dosh, do you remember what year it was?
Very good. Are there additional questions from committee members? With that, I'm going to open public testimony, and I'm looking to our LIO moderator. Can you confirm that we do not have anyone online? Wonderful. With that, I'm going to close public testimony. And Representative LeBon, would you like to make any final comments before we close out for today?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you to the committee for a very educational hour, very good questions. And thank you, Mr. Mitchell, Mr. Dosh, for participating.
Thank you, Representative LeBon. Thank you to our invited testifiers for their willingness to participate and provide all that lengthy bit of information and history for us. Much appreciated. With nothing else to come before the committee, we are adjourned at 9:13 a.m.
Well, hold-